Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. This morning is the 27th of February, 2012, and good morning to the students in front of me, and a big good morning to all the students across the great universe. And as you will see in a moment, I know that you're listening and commenting. Unlike yesterday, we were in the middle of yesterday was a fascinating lecture dealing with great Rabbanim and Psak Halacha and getting other Rabbanim to acquiesce, and we gave some fascinating examples. Today we return to the world of Hashkafa, contemporary problems. It may be a world that's illusory. The world that we dealt with yesterday is real and will live on. And time and again, we'll have to come back to Rav Avadya Yosef and to Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg and to Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog. Today's world, here today, gone tomorrow, and we only hope that tomorrow will be better than the today. Anyway, after spending probably a year or so on Zionism in contemporary Israel, we now are dealing with the whole concept of Das Torah, which is a question that I've gotten thousands of times over. As time moves on, the question multiplies and intensifies as the concept of Das Torah becomes more formalized. And we've spoken about what Emunat Chachamim means and the whole concept of Torah Shebal Peh and Lo Tasur Kol Asher Yadidecha Yaminu Smol. We went through all the sources. And obviously, we reached the conclusion that if we're good Jews, we believe in Emunat Chachamim with all our heart and soul. But what about questions that come up beyond the pale of Devar Hashem Zu Halacha, or the Kabbalah, or all that's involved in the Shalshalat HaKabbalah, and we defined it in detail with all the sources. And I showed you that already the Alter Rebbe, and I quoted to you from the Tanya, how the Alter Rebbe was opposed to asking Rabbanim all these little simple questions that deal with life situations that are not pure halacha. I showed you Rav Avadya's daughter in a recent article, a recent interview where she complains bitterly how her father is so tortured by 1,001 questions that are not halakhic, that make him cry, and he's helpless and hapless to help. Let's put it that way. I also quoted to you from a blog by Harry Merrillis, who functions out of Chicago. I understand the businessman retired today, Talmud of Rabban Soloveitchik, and I quoted to you his strictures and his critique of Das Torah. And as a matter of fact, we ended off the shiur last week, or we started the shiur last week, with a second blog where he tells the story of Beit Shemesh, where people are asking advice of a rabbi what language to speak to their children, and the rabbi tells them, Das Torah, to speak only Hebrew, not to speak English. If the kid's first language will be English, he'll become a shagetz. And here's a kid who grows up, can't speak to his grandparents, and all the concepts of English and computers and mathematics are totally alien to this youngster. And Das Torah, who was right, who was wrong? We spoke about it last week. Now, when it comes to political questions, military questions, material questions, I showed you the Sugi and Yoma, that there was a concept of asking the Urim Betumim. It can very well be that from the Ramban, it's a chiv to ask the Urim Turim and to get the divine advice, certainly if we want to go to war. Nowadays, of course, we don't have an Urim Turim, we don't have a Choshen Mishpat, and I developed the idea that to me is the most important philosophic question that the Rav ever stated, where the Rav dealt with Joseph E. Echav and what the argument was about the dreams, and how we should deal with these problems, Bizman Hazer, and it involves retrospection, introspection, what does God want out of us, what succeeds, what doesn't succeed, etc. And then, of course, is it really true that rabbis know everything and don't have to consult? And I quoted the Gemara in Baba Batra, a fascinating Gemara, that when a Talmid Chacham goes to get married, he has to know and eat slowly and enjoy. To my class, I always tell the students, bring breakfast. And particularly now, they started davening a half hour later. They never asked me, Baruch Hashem, I don't daven here. Bunch of shkatzim, bankers, oisfats, trumpenics, davening a quarter to eight, a disgrace. I go back to yesterday's shir, what I told you about Reb Chaim and the Netziv. But that's life here. So if you daven a quarter to eight, as a yeshivish davening, you reach breakfast by 9:15. No, I got to begin shir at 9 for many reasons. The little son, I quoted the Gemara, when you got married, did you bring an amaretz with you? If you didn't bring an amaretz, it's a sign you're not a Talmud Chacham. If you're a Talmud Chacham, it's an open Gemara. They may fake you out, may give you the wrong girl. Bring someone who looks at women and knows what a woman looks like. Then, of course, we ended off the shir with that crucially important Gemara that we'll come back to later today. And it's the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, when the Romans were geyser on the Jews, not to observe Shabbos, not to do Brit Milah, not to learn Torah, how they went and they consulted with a matriarch, a non-Jewish matriarch who knew all the great leaders in Rome, and she told them, go and demonstrate at night and cry out, why are we different? Why do you persecute us? Let us learn Torah, let us observe Shabbos, let us do Brit Milah, etc. Now, I just want to comment. I got a myriad of emails from all over the world. And first of all, Rabbi Rubin, who's not here, but he asked the question last week after class. He is here. Where is he?
He's on his way.
Oh, he's on his way. Okay. So you'll tell him later on. I want to answer his question. So he said to me that someone from the right-wing world, I'm using popular words, the right-wing world, told Rabbi Rubin that, what do you mean you don't believe in Das Torah? You don't believe in Das Torah? How can it be? And Das Torah is like prophecy. And we're walking out into the hall. And Rabbi Rubin quoted to me the Gemara in Baba Batra, Daf Yud Bet Amud Aleph. They said to him that Miyom Shecharav Beit Hamikdash Nitla Nevuah Mei Neviyim VeNitna LeChachamim. And I shot back at him that if that's the case, the same Gemara says, another opinion, Miyom Shecharav Beit Hamikdash Nitla Nevuah Min HaNeviyim VeNitna LeShotim UleTinokot. So I have to tell you, I've never yet seen that Gemara quoted as a source for Das Torah. But if you look at the Gemara, what the Gemara is saying is that occasionally we have a clairvoyant feeling. You know, even a simple person, sometimes Chachamim, and sometimes even children, and even fools say something that turns out to be correct. And I don't have to tell you, there's a whole concept, semi-Kabbalistic, it's a concept I certainly don't approve of. I think Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik would get hysterical. They take these children who are challenged, if I'm using the correct word, these children never who are born with problems, congenital problems of intelligence, etc., and they had them speak, and they consider it based upon this Gemara. Well, if you can believe in something like that, I think you're downgrading what Torah is all about. But I wouldn't say that this Gemara is a source. What's beautiful about the Gemara, there's a beautiful little story here in Baba Batra, Daf Yud Bet Amud Bet, where they're talking about that the Nevuah is in the hands of children. So they tell the following story, that Rav Chisda had a little girl who was sitting on his lap. And two of Rav Chisda's Talmidim, Rava and Rabbi Bachama, were standing in front of their Rebbe, and her father said to her, which one would you like to marry? Which one do you want? And she says, both of them. And Rava popped up, and I'm the second one. And if you know what happened, that's exactly what happened. Rabbi Bachama was the Rosh Yeshiva first. He died young, and Rava succeeded him, and she was married to both of them. First to a first husband, when he died, she married the successor. So it's fascinating that Gemara, how clever the girl was. She said, I want both of them. and how quick Rebbe reacted and said, I'm second. So you see, he waived the Eshet Ne'urim. If you understand what I'm saying, I don't want to spell it out. But there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin here, Daf Chafet, you can't, he waived that to live longer. Now, those of you who read me, think about it. Okay, now, I want to comment on the comments that came in, because it's very fascinating how many people are upset and angry with Das Torah, and from all camps, as you will see. So I just want to say, number one, to my friends in Chabad, to my Talmidim in Chabad, who I so value and appreciate, and I consider it a great zchut. A gentleman here just told me he finished his first reading of Washington, but he's not ready to answer questions yet. He asked the second time. So I want to tell you, I'm the Modela Kodesh Baruch Hu, that I did have a big zchut. The picture of the Rav with the two Rebbeim, to me, is historic. That the great-great-great-grandson of Rav Chaim Voloshin, the Talmud Mufak of the Vilna Gaon, should be sitting with the great-great-great-great-grandchildren of the Alter Rebbe. And if you remember, when the Alter Rebbe came to see the Vilna Gaon left town rather than speak to an apikoros. And thank God the Rav and the 6th and 7th Rebbe are sitting together. And that's a whole story how I got the picture, and I thank Chabad for allowing me to be the first one to publish it. But I want to say one thing, and it goes beyond Das Torah. When we talk about the past, people will come to me, you know, again, Das Torah, it catches on. So people think Rakefet knows something. All right, I know a little bit more than the average person walking the streets. Fine. So they'll come and ask me, what do you think is going to happen? You know, the country, everything is shaking here. What do you think will be? I mean, you take Choktal. I've got 99 different questions on what's going to happen, as you heard me let off some steam yesterday. So I always answer people when they ask me what's going to happen. I have enough time, enough difficulty predicting the past. Why do you want me to predict the future? And please understand that. What we're trying to do, I try to find where the roots of Das Torah began. So in my opinion, it began with the Hasidic world. Could be I'm right, could be I'm wrong. This is not, it's not a psak halacha. Psak halacha, I got to know what I'm doing, what I'm saying. I have to know the source. I have to be able to defend myself. And I have to be able to fend off critiques of my answer. But you know, when you're talking hashkafa, Jewish history, we're trying to make an intelligent guess. And I'm entitled to my guess. No one has to agree with me. So when I mentioned the Alter Rebbe source with Das Torah, a lot of Chabadnikim contacted, and one in particular wrote me, Rebbe Paul Dovig Revich wrote a beautiful letter, and he quotes that even though the Alter Rebbe was opposed, Chassidim asked the Rebbe advice, and of course when they waited online to get the dollar bill from the Rebbe, I don't have to tell you this, I know it had his writing to me, how many people I know who waited online to get the dollar bill, and they asked the Rebbe 100,000 questions in the course of those years that he gave out dollar bills. It could be over 1 million questions. Everyone waiting in line asked the Rebbe something. I mean, anyone above the age of, girls above the age of 12, and boys above the age of 13, because Yosef Chaim waited online, and if you don't believe me, I'll prove it to you later. And the little son was too young, he was a little kid. It's just unbelievable to see him staring at the Rebbe with awe. That's what's so beautiful about the picture. But he didn't ask the Rebbe anything. But anyone else, I'm very, very well aware of it. And I understand that quoting the Alter Rebbe, I may have thrown a curveball. But nevertheless, it shows you that the Alter Rebbe already was being bothered by a myriad of questions. And Nebuch, as Rakefet said, have Rachmanis on Rabbanim, unless they know everything from the age of 3, which could be that these great Gedolim, the angel forgot to touch their under their nose. They were born and remembered everything. So they don't have to learn the rest of their lives. They have time to answer 1,001 questions that have nothing to do with halacha. Anyway, it's a fascinating question, and it's my opinion. I may be right, I may be wrong. Obviously, it's not the Lithuanian approach which makes the Hasidim so angry, as I read to you their concepts last week, I believe, responding to letters that I received. Now, what's interesting is how many people are upset with Das Torah. So Rabbi Merilis, and I have to thank Rabbi Merilis, he wrote a beautiful blog last week. Thank you, Rabbi Rakefet, responding to the shiur of last Monday. I think he already wrote it on Tuesday. I don't know how Danny Wolf gets it up so quickly, but we're in agreement, okay? Then I get from a Talmud of mine in Chabad, quoting Rabbi Avraham Shem Tov, who's one of the leading Chabad shlichim. He may be the shliach, the head of all the shlichim. Das Torah, this is a quote, Das Torah is the makah shelok tuva b'Torah. Okay? Pretty sharp coming from a chassid. Pretty sharp. And then, Achron Chaviv, I get from Florida, I couldn't believe this. Yateg ne'eman. Yateg ne'eman da hatbed of das Torah. Litvish. Here, I can't believe it. The Seichel Deficit by Rabbi Avraham Birnbaum. And I never read a better article more opposed to Das Torah than that article. And it all, and I got to tell you, I can't believe what I read. It deals with vaccination. I never dreamt that in Lakewood there's a whole group of people who are opposed to vaccination. And now they have an epidemic there. It's not a small matter. So I want to tell you, do we vaccinate, don't we vaccinate? Well, how do you approach it? It's nothing to do with halakha. It's a question, take a course in statistics. Let me explain to you. Very simple. Ephraim, did you drive here this morning? You walked. Tell me, why didn't you drive? Because in your youth you saw cars smack up and people get hurt. You had a traumatic experience. You said, I'm never going to drive. Tell me, you walk? Cars go up on the sidewalk. I know people. I can give you a whole list. People were knocked out doing nothing. I know people coming back from a Kiddush on Shabbos in Flatbush. A drunken Puerto Rican went up on the sidewalk and killed the mother before the eyes of the children on Shabbos. It's years ago, I know. Other story, God have mercy, what that girl, one of the children, what she went through left religion. It took them 20 years until she was able to deal with it and come back to Torah Hashem Tamima. No? So why do we walk? Let me tell you a famous story that the eyewitnesses and ear witnesses to the story are Rabbi Dr. Professor David Hartman, Rabbi Dr. Harav HaGaon Moran, Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, and your humble servant. The story is very simple. David Hartman was a Lakewood boy. You all know that. Chaim Bullen Lakewood came to YU and was one of the last to ever get smicha from YU without a college degree. Later on, he's in the rabbinate in the Bronx. I knew him intimately. And he's getting a bachelor's at Fordham University, one of these phony bachelors where you get 96 credits for your theological degree. Sounds familiar? From Baltimore, you have the same thing to a certain degree. Okay. So now, you can do it in many places. Then he calls the Rav in the late 60s, mid-60s, says, Rebbe, have a chance to get a master's at Fordham University. They're offering me whatever, a fellowship, a scholarship. Should I study it? Philosophy, should I take it? And the Rav says, Hartman, what's the shaila? And Hartman says, Rebbe, you study philosophy, you can go off the path. And the Rav says, Hartman, planes crash, we still fly. Hartman said, years later, he wanted to call the Rav and say, Rebbe, the plane crashed. Okay? Quote, end quote. He has a sense of humor. I'll say this for David Hartman. He has a sense of humor, Baruch Hashem. Okay? But look what I'm saying. What's the whole question here? Yitzchak, you drove here this morning, did you wear a seatbelt? Why did you wear a seatbelt? Because if you wouldn't wear a seatbelt, they'll call you over and give you a ticket. Yitzchak, I know people who were killed because they were wearing seatbelts. The car crashed, it went on fire, they panicked, they were wearing a seatbelt, they couldn't jump out on time. They were killed because of the seatbelt. It goes with percentages. 95% of the time in a car crash, the seatbelt saves you. 5%, it may lead to disastrous results. Same thing with vaccination. You go with percentages. It's seichel. It's common sense. What can a rabbi answer? You have to know, does this vaccine help? Doesn't it help? Sorg, Sabin. When Yitzchak and I grew up, we knew many kids, lo aleinu, who had polio. Now, how many of you know someone today who has or had polio? You follow me, Daniel? And I couldn't believe my eyes. Yateid Ne'aman and Aaron Rakefet and Rabbi Avraham Shem Tov and Rabbi Harry Merilis are all dancing to the same tune. German Mashiach will be here tomorrow, Be'ezrat Hashem, if not today. And finally, I want to end off the first part of the Shia, not the most important part, but just responding to all my Talmidim. I want to quote from Rabbi Gurevich, sent me a beautiful story which characterizes everything I believe in Hashkafa-wise. And he tells the following story. When the fifth Rebbe of Lubavitch, Rabbi Shalom Dober, he's known as the Rashab, that's Reb Shmuel's son, if you know the Tzemach Tzedek was the third Rebbe. The Tzemach Tzedek's son was Reb Shmuel. Reb Shmuel's son was Reb Shalom Dober. Reb Shalom Dober's son was Reb Yosef Yitzchak. Reb Yosef Yitzchak's son was Reb Menachem Mendel. So when the fifth Rebbe was a little child, he was playing with his older brother, Reb Zalman Aaron, known as the Raza. The Raza felt bad that he was shorter than his younger brother, the Rashab, and therefore pushed him into a ditch, which was next to them, thereby making the Raza taller. Now you just think for a second that the older brother is shorter than his next brother. And he felt bad. Here, the younger kid is taller. So he pushed his brother into a ditch. No, if you pushed your brother into a ditch and you're standing next to him, you're going to be taller. Their father, Reb Shmuel, the Rebbe, saw what was happening. He immediately went outside and told the Raza that he could have stepped on a rock, which thereby would make him taller than his brother. But he didn't have to push his brother into a ditch. And I want to tell you, this is beautiful. And this is one of our big problems with the Lithuanian so-called concept of Das Teira, that even the Hasidim, who I believe are the source of this concept of Das Teira, that they so violently object to, because the Lithuanian approach is my way or the highway, to quote Rabbi Merilis. Either you go my way or you're not a good Jew. And that is a desecration of Torah Hashem Tamila. There are many approaches. Halacha commands, demands respect. Read and reread Washington when a little kid, Ani Rothkopf, goes searching where there is truth. And the conclusion I reached then as a high school kid is exactly the conclusion I honor and love and respect until this very moment, some many, many decades later. And that's exactly the story. So we all have our difference. I don't say that. All the names I mentioned, we all think exactly the same way. Chas v'chalila, Tzelem Elokim. We think differently on many issues, but we never put other people down. This is my approach. I may be right. Maybe you have an approach that's better. Maybe it's better for you. Wouldn't be better for me. But there are many paths to our Kaddish Baruch Hu in thinking. Dvar Hashem, halacha, commands, demands obedience. Now, let me go further and let me build into the heart of today's Shiur. Let me continue. Do we need the advice of lay people? Rabbanim? We think we know it all? Shas, Paiskim? Take Rav Soloveitchik, don't take me. Take Rabbi Lichtenstein. Take the Rav. Take Rav Moshe Feinstein. Do they need the advice of lay people? I want to quote a Gemara in a Rivim, Daf Pei Vav Amid Aleph, an unbelievable Gemara. This Gemara is the antithesis of my entire life, of everything I've lived for, every decision I had to make. Rebbe Mechabed Hashirim! Rebbe Akiva Mechabed Hashirim. Rebbe gave covet to wealthy people. The great Rebbe Akiva gave covet to wealthy people. nothing more important than being a Rebbe, being a Malamed. How much money I have turned down in my life to remain behind the desk. And I'm being legitimate with you, being honest with you. How many positions? People went to my wife and complained. Your husband says, no, to us at the cult of Friday night, the least he could have said was, I'll think it over and let you know after Shabbos. This is a message. I once had a Rebbe, a European Rebbe, a frustrated Rebbe. As long as I live, I can never forget it. It's a miracle I didn't walk away from Torah at that point. The Rebbe came down hard and a kid in the class. Kid happened to be the son of a very wealthy individual, a survivor who made it in America. And the kid says to the Rebbe, Rebbe, what can I do? I chab nish kein mazel. I don't have as good a head as the Rebbe. This happened in YU. I'm an eye with ear and eye witness. It's not hearsay. And the Rebbe fended back of him. Du hast nicht kein Masel. Wenn ich auf Masel bin, ich wie eine Tante bist, dann eine Tante sitzt da. He says, if I had Masel, you don't have Masel, I don't have Masel. If I had Masel, I'd be your father, and your father would be sitting here trying to teach some American kids Shas and Peskin. What anger. What a message. A wealthy man is more than a Talmud Chacham, more than a Gadol B'Torah. From the Rav, Baruch Hashem, I got exactly the opposite message. The Rav in his magnificent language, more important than the warrior, more important than the king, more important than royalty, more important than wealth, the Talmud Chacham, who guarantees the continuity of the Jewish people. The Gemara is against the Rav. Rebbe Mechabed, Rebbe Ki Mechabed Hashirim. I'll tell you pshat in the Gemara. There are two types of wealthy people. Some people inherit a bundle. You see that the Queen of England. Let me tell you a story that you'll never forget that I heard directly from the person involved. The good Lord, Emanuel Jacobowitz, chief rabbi of the British Empire. When he was retiring, they made a series of farewells for him. And one of the farewells was a weekend at Buckingham Palace with the Queen. And you have to be English to appreciate who the Queen is. We're basically Americans in this room, Canadians. What can I tell you? I know people from England who told me when there's a lady who lives today in Netanya, when she met the Queen, she cried to this, the privilege she had to meet the Queen. No, I want to see one person cry for that reason when he meets Obama, Clinton, JFK, Ronald Reagan, Jimmy Carter. Oh my gosh, how low can low one can get. But in England, the Queen. And Rabbi Jacobowitz told me he had to take classes in protocol with the British, the ministry that surrounds the Queen. And they explained to him that Sir Jacobowitz, whatever they call him, your lord, I don't know, you tell me how you address a lord, your lord, you don't start conversation with the Queen. She will start the conversation. Whatever topic she chooses, that's the topic you will speak about. So Rabbi Jacobowitz told me, here they are, Friday night, glatt kosher cater in Buckingham Palace, and he makes Kiddush, and he explains Kiddush, and they wash, Netilat Yadayim, and they make the motzi, and the Queen turns to Rabbi Jacobowitz, he told me this word by word, and she says, Rabbi, tell me, why did you have such success with your children, and I totally failed with mine? That was the Queen's question to the chief rabbi of the British Empire. And of course, he went on to speak about Torah and Torah education and mitzvot and a life structure and a concept of surrender. And here you have a classic example. When someone inherits wealth, no, from the children of the Queen, I don't know how much we can learn. But there are people who inherited wealth intensified it, increased. There are people who started from nothing and built up businesses, concerns, high tech, made decisions. Many employees who look up to them with such love and admiration, the charity they've done. Rebbe Hayama Chabeda Shirim Rebbe Akiva. Yes, those type of wealthy people, there is so much we can learn from them. And you can't, we are sitting here because of Mr. Gross. And believe me, we all saw with our own eyes how the love was Machabed Mr. Gross. And I can tell you a little secret. Aaron Rakefet did a sinful act in his two volumes on the Rav. You know what that sinful act was? There are all types of rules of scholarship. And you're not allowed to publish someone else's scholarship. You can cite a paragraph, two paragraphs, three paragraphs, but the minute you cite, it's a big problem. All right, there have been court cases, and even with the Rav's heritage, it's true, you can cite it and say, I heard the Rav say this, and this is what I believe he said. But I'm a Talmud of the Rav, I didn't even want to do that. So if I cite the Rav, you will find in the two volumes of the Rav, everything I cite, all the insights, the place, how many pages, 300-400 pages of insights, selections from lectures, paragraph, two paragraph, three paragraphs. One exception, that Chatzuf Rakefet went and cited the entire talk of the Rav and said to the world, I challenge anyone to sue me. Can anyone tell me what talk? No, who knows the Rav, the world of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik by heart? Daniel, you there yet? I don't even know by heart, but you should already. Ephraim, I cite the Rav's entire talk in honor of Mr. Gross. When Mr. Gross dedicated the Beis Medrash in YU, which has been sold many times, that's a different question. I spoke about it with my grandsons. How many years when you dedicated him at the Harry Fischel Beis Medrash? Today it's the, at least at last time I looked, it was the Joe Gross Beis Medrash. And at that dedication, I think it was 1977, 78, you can look into my book at the exact date, that talk that Mr. Gross gave about the Rav was fabulous. Do you remember that talk? What is a balabas? What is the difference between a lay leader and a rabbinic leader? And that talk, the Rav doesn't quote this Gemara, but I can tell you that talk was an exact example bringing to life Rebbe Mechabed Ashirim, Rebbe Akiva Mechabed Ashirim. Chas v'chalila, rabbis, great leaders, leaders of our people, thinkers, visionaries. Chas v'chalila, we should say, we know it all, we can do it all, we don't need advice, we don't need input. It's against an open Gemara. Shas and Paiskim, Mr. Gross can't help me. When it comes to building a campus and endless little decisions, Mr. Gross is the address, and he has his people, his lawyers, his accountants, his architects. He has people that he knows, that he trusts, and this is how life moves on and Torah institutions are built. And we can't do it all alone. And here I give you an example that I was an ear witness to. I take you back to a very famous moment in Torah history in the state of Israel. I'll come to it later when I deal with Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein and his approach to Das Torah. Many years ago already, I believe it was 1990, the whole country held its breath. Because it wasn't like today that there's more of a right-wing country due to the Russian emigration. 1990s it was still, and also today we have to acknowledge there are many more Baal Tshuva and the Dati Lumi world and the Haredi world, many more children. A process, statistically, that every year the country moves slightly more right-wing and slightly more religious. And by the way, this will explain to you why there's so many battles now about religion in the public thoroughfare, because the secular element is frightened that they're losing it. You know what's going on with Golani, where they just had a tremendous article and all the newspapers have dealt with it, where like 85% of the top ranking officers all wear kippot. And now they're calling upon more Chiloniyim to join Golani. It's turned into one big yeshiva, and it's good for the survival of the Jewish people. But if we want the elite units in the army to reflect the population, you don't want only kippot. So, the 1990s, there was a chance to establish a left-wing government. And the question was whether Shas, that was manipulating this move, and Ari Dery at the time, and whether Agudat Yisrael would go with them. Now, I have to tell you, they certainly would have gone with them. But there was one problem. Agudat Yisrael had to answer at that moment in time to Rav Shach. And there was a tremendous keenness in Stei Eliyahu in Tel Aviv, in a big stadium. Tens of thousands of people. I happen to have videoed it, and it's just a shame that video players are disappearing. It's one of my greatest videos ever, because the Israeli TV zeroed in on that keenness, and you see Rav Ovadia and the Bells of Rebbe and Rav Shach sitting together. It's Mamish Yemot HaMashiach. And now comes the key address. Who will form the next government? Will it be Peres or will it be Shamir? And Rav Shach gives this address, simplistic address compared to the way the rabbis speak in public, but a very emotional address. And he speaks about what went wrong with Israel and the secular Zionist and the leftist, and it becomes very clear that he won't allow Agudat Yisrael to form a government with Shimon Peres. Despite all the machinations behind the scene, and despite the fact that it already was a done deal. But in that talk, he starts talking about the secular newspapers. And among the papers he criticizes, he mentions Panim El Panim. And the audience has to bite their lips. The radio commentaries, the TV commentators are going crazy. The year was 1919. Panim El Panim, which taught me modern Hebrew, because I started subscribing to it the day it came out in about 1957. I was a Bnei Akiva kid, and I used to get it every week, came in from Israel, Panim El Panim. That's how I learned about Israel and modern Hebrew and the good things here and the difficulties here. And it stopped publication by the late 60s, early 70s at the latest. And here the Gadol Hadar in front of the entire state of Israel is criticizing Yediot Ahronot, Maariv, and Panim El Panim. And I told my students at the time, Halavai, a Talmud Chacham who's also worldly, a businessman, and knows what's going on in the country, could have told Rav Shach before the speech, Rebbe, the Manish Panim El Panim, don't mention Panim El Panim, and that's exactly where you need advice and input. I viewed it, wow, Rav Shach is beautiful. For him, he's in a time warp. Time stands still. Fabulous. I'll tell you something else about that speech that was very moving and very revealing. He started to describe what a Jewish house was like before the 20th century, before Hitler, before everything that destroys us. and he describes a mother and father and a Shabbos table, and he breaks into tears, and he can no longer speak Hebrew. He can only go on in Yiddish. And it shows you his mamalashin. It shows you, on the other hand, the sacrifice the man made when he switched Panovich from Yiddish to Hebrew so Svadik youngsters should be able to participate. And you think about that. And whenever I'm criticized, and some of my Chabad Talmidim criticize me for having such affection for Rav Shach, yes, I don't say I'm a follower of Rav Shach. I don't say I believe in everything he believed, hashkafa-wise, but I love a Jew who loves Torah. All right? He expressed it a little differently than we do in the Wayu world, in the Chabad world, in the Ger world, but he loved Torah. And that was so revealing when he broke into Yiddish and he no longer spoke Hebrew. What was beautiful is the Belzer Rebbe is bending over and whispering in Rav Ovadia's ears an ongoing translation of Rav Shach's Yiddish into modern Hebrew. Okay. Now, fine. Rebbe, you've made a good case. You show from my Mori Chazal that we need lay people, we need input, we need wealthy people, successful people, academicians. All right, all this is important. By the way, I want to tell you, Ephraim showed me a printout here from very fascinating, this is Ungarische Hamaor, Rabbi Amsel. It's a world you're not familiar with. And it seems they came up with a homeopathy treatment, and they turned to Reb Moshe Feinstein, and they wanted Reb Moshe, I don't know what they wanted, if they wanted a heksha from him and a support, that homeopathy is good, that this treatment can cure you. And Rabbi Moshe David Tendler writes back to the guy, my father-in-law, my Rebbe, Reb Moshe Feinstein, asked me to let you know that he cannot deal with your question because he doesn't believe in homeopathy and what you've discovered, but the doctors don't agree with this. And Reb Moshe David Tendler writes a whole letter, and that's why Reb Moshe is not answering you. So they reprint the correspondence, and the editor of Hamar makes a comment on the other side of the paper. He rips the heck out of Reb Moshe David Tendler and says, you went to college and you've been ruined by these academicians and science, he says. We look at the world created by God, and if these are the medicines that face, these are the herbs that God created, we have to look into it and not look into scientific textbooks. And on the basis of what we find in this vegetation, we can come up with all kinds of cures, and college has ruined your thinking. That's what he writes back, basically, to Reb Moshe David Tendler. So again, you see, whose side do you come down on? And I want to tell you, I've been asked these questions 1,000 times over with homeopathy, with medicines, and I always give the same answer, the answer that David Applebaum, Hashem Yikom Damo, taught me to give. And the answer is very simple. First, you go to a regular doctor and you take regular medicines. If you feel something else can help and your doctor tells you it won't contradict the medicines you're taking, then get involved. But please don't take homeopathy. I know people who died because they went the homeopathic approaches and God have mercy with cancer and a special diet, and they didn't do chemotherapy and didn't do surgery, and the wind up was they died. So Baruch Hashem, you have to have a little seichel here to quote the Yateg Ne'eman. Okay, is there a word Das Torah? Does that word exist? Do we find it in Shas? And I have to tell you, the word Das Torah is found one time in Shas. And it has nothing whatsoever to do with Das Torah in the concept or the form or the format that it is used in the year 2013. And where do we find it? It's a Gemara you all should know. You're studying Yerodea now. We find it in Chulin Daf Tzadi Amid Bet. What sugya do we find it in? The Girhanasha. The Girhanasha, let me see what do we have. What would be the English word for Girhanasha? I believe I wrote it down. 1 second. The sciatic, am I pronouncing it right? The sciatic nerve. Now, the animal has nerves on both sides. So the question of the Gemara is, which nerve does it apply to? The right, the left, or the right and the left? And I'm quoting right towards the bottom of Tzadi Amid Beit, the Tani Rebbe Hudomer, Einen Oheg Elabi Achat, that the sciatic nerve is only one. Vahadat Machra'at Et Shel Yamin. And that Seichel, common sense, tells us it has to be on the right side. That's the one that the Torah forbade. Ibrahilahu Mifshat Pshita Leila Rabbi Yehuda Umaydat Das Torah. Is it something that Rabbi Yehuda is certain it's the right side? And what does he mean? That tradition. You'll see the Gemara continues. Maybe we can find the condition. Maybe we can find the support. That Torah tells us it's the right side. Or Dilma, Sveki Mesafkelei, Umaydat Dat Nota. That logically speaking, we're in doubt. We don't have a proof. We can't be sure. We don't have a tradition. We're in doubt. Okay, we're in doubt. But logically speaking, the right side wins out. This is the only place in all of Shas that the word Dat Torah, let me pronounce it right, Dat Torah or Das Torah, the only time we meet this word, Chulin Dat Sadi Amid Bet. It has to do with the sciatic nerve, it has to do with the Gid Hanasha, it has to do with whether it's logical or we have a tradition. If we use the word Dat Torah, it means we have a tradition. We can prove it, perhaps. We have a Perish Mekubal. But if not, it's simply logic. But it's the only place in all of rabbinic literature until the 20th century that Das Torah appears. Now, coming back to history. 1919, Agudat Yisrael meets for the first time as an organization. World War I has ended. You all know, and I explained this in great detail, that the original plan to establish Agudat Yisrael began already in 1912. The idea was that all Torah Jews should be together in one organization, because by 1912, Chilul Shabbos is all over Eastern Europe. Chilul Shabbos is something we never, ever saw before in public. And by 1900, 1910, socialism, anarchism, secular Zionism, communism, Bundesism, and the Chilul Shabbat is rampant. So Jews got together, Chassidim, Mitnagdim, German Jews, and they wanted to form an organization. 1914, they declared they would hold their first convention. Jews started traveling from all over the world to be at that convention, including Rabbi Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Cook, who was then the chief rabbi of Jaffa, and the convention never took place. Many were stranded in Europe. World War I broke out. Rabbi Cook goes to Switzerland. 1916, goes to England. Rabbi of the Machzikei Hadat. 1919, returns to become the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim. Now, in 1919, they hold the opening convention, if we can call it. And of course, one of the big guiding principles they put down is that the rabbis can rule on non-halachic matters. This is called Das Torah, and whatever they rule is totally binding. They are correct, They may be infallible. I'm going to give you a source for that word in a minute, which is a very frightening word to use about basav adam, human beings, b'nei tumuto, b'nei anushim, whichever expression you want to quote from Chazal. And why did they come up with this das Torah? And again, I will say it's a theory. I don't want anyone to think I'm totally right. I may be right. I may be wrong. It is an educated guess as one who has studied and lived the period B'Lev V'Nefesh. Nothing was more powerful after World War I than Zionism. Before World War I, and I said this and I gave figures maybe a year or two ago, before World War I, who wanted to be a Zionist? What are you, crazy? We're happy, we're at home. Listen, it's the year 2013 today. I challenge anyone here to go to Teaneck, to go to Englewood, and to yell on the street corners, Jews, get out, we have a land. Jews who daven three times a day and say, Jews who bench two times a day, Jews who believe. And you're going to tell them, get out, leave Lawrence, leave the five towns, leave Beverly Hills. They'll say you're crazy. So if you have that today, could you imagine before World War I? And read, study the Rav's Chamesh Drasha, the Drasha I referred to last week, how he describes the mentality of the Jew in Eastern Europe. I have my Beis Medrash, I have my Rebbe, I have my Mikvah, I have my Daf Yomi, I have my Rav Lisman Daf Yomi, I have my Gemara Shir, I have my Yom Yaakov Shir. People are happy. It's very hard to shake people up. And no one, Zionism was a few kooks, that's what it amounted to. You looked upon, something's the matter with you. What are you lacking here? Then World War I came and the Jews suffered so, they were caught on the battleground, no one gave a hoot about them. The only ones that treated the Jews with any respect was the German Imperial Army. I mean, it's unbelievable. This is why I told you in World War II, most Jews in Eastern Europe said, oh, the Germans are coming to conquer. They'll be better than the Russians. They'll be better than the Poles. They'll be better than the Litvakians. They'll be better than the Latvians. No one could believe. They knew German army from World War I were the most decent. The other armies, they wanted to have fun. They shot at Jews. Then there were pogroms. Then there were riots. And the Jew, suddenly everyone woke up, we have to have a homeland, we have to have a Jewish homeland, and Zionism became powerful. Hundreds of thousands marched to the Zionist beat. Before World War I, if you had 10,000 Zionists, I'm overstating the case. Agudat Yisrael viewed the Zionist movement as its greatest enemy. Zionist movement, secular, irreligious, and they had to fight it tooth and nail. And I think that this is why they had to come up, or they found the concept of Das Torah so convenient, because now they could say the greatest Rabbanim in the world, the Chafetz Chaim and Chaim Isaac Leszczynski, and the Kavner Rav and the Gera Rebbe, and the Chutkaber Rebbe, the greatest and the great rabbis out of Germany, the greatest Rabbanim in the world, say there will not be Jewish sovereignty in the land of Israel until Mashiach comes, and this is Das Torah, and Chas V'Chalila, you should fall for the Zionist idol, quote, end quote. Well, if you just say it as a theory, it doesn't have the same impact with those beautiful words, Das Torah. And that's, in my opinion, why they had to be so strong on this, so extreme, and this is how Das Torah begins. Now, obviously, people ask questions. What does Das Torah mean? And here I want to quote to you Agudat Yisrael sources, what is Das Torah? And I want to begin by quoting the most extreme source of all, a source that has been quoted time and again, debated, negated, abrogated, nullified, but it's a very powerful source. And I actually met the individual who wrote the article. he is the Rav of the young Israel, at least, I don't know today, but I met him when he was the Rav of the young Israel of Williamsburg. The young Israel of Williamsburg seems to be a Tata de Satre, but you got to remember, in the 1920s and the 1930s, Williamsburg had a majority of Jews there, where Mizrahiites were what you would call today modern Orthodox. Well, why you people, oh you people, young Israel people, Rabbi Sidney B. Honig of the YU faculty, YU graduate school, dean of the graduate school later, Rabbi George Finkelstein's father-in-law, Rabbi George Finkelstein, who administers the great synagogue, he was rabbi of the young Israel of Williamsburg. So the name lives on, and the rabbi in the 60s, into the 70s, into the 80s, and go to the computer and check, or if they have a website, if he's still there, Rabbi Bernard Weinberger. Now, the OU in America had a beautiful publication that I mourn its dismissal or its demise, the Jewish Observer. I trust you all have seen and held copies of the Jewish Observer in your hands. Why did Rakefet love the Jewish Observer so much? Because it kept me up to date what a good Yisrael is thinking, what the Rosh Yeshiva thinking, their concepts of what's going on in Israel, how they view it. I could agree with part of it, I could disagree, but I always felt I was up to date with the Jewish Observer. And unfortunately for me, all the English Haredi weeklies today put them out of business, particularly Bamishpacha. The English edition of Bamishpacha, which is a weekly, if I'm not mistaken, and the weekly, and then you have the magazines of Yateid Ne'eman and Hamodia, and in every lawn in Borough Park you can find a mailbox that's marked Hamodia. Another one is marked Bamishpacha. Third one you'll see is marked Yateid Ne'eman. You can tell a person by the magazines he receives. But Jewish Observer, Olav Shalom. I'm now quoting from the October 1963 issue. It's the earliest issues of Jewish Observer. The name of the article, The Role of the Gedolim. Of course, this is another concept, Gedolim. What does it mean, Gedolim? I know, never heard that word used before. Rabbanim. We spoke about Rabbanei Ir, Rashi Yeshiva, but now there's a new concept that goes, who gives you Das Torah? The Gedolim. And now I quote Rabbi Bernard Weinberger, quote, what is Das Torah? Quote, a special endowment or capacity to penetrate objective reality, recognize the facts as they really are, and apply the pertinent halachic principles. What? I haven't gotten to this. This line is innocuous. A special endowment or capacity to penetrate objective reality, recognize the facts as they really are, and apply the pertinent halachic principles. It is a form, you're sitting, of Ruach HaKodesh, as it were, which borders, if only remotely, in the periphery of prophecy. End quote. I repeat, it is a form of Ruach HaKodesh, as it were, which borders, if only remotely, on the periphery of prophecy. End quote. It's a very, very frightening second sentence. That you may want to go to a rabbi, and this I quote the Rav, where the Rav talks about this in my work on the Rav. And the Rav says, I quote it in Volume 2. It's a very, Volume 2 has some very important contemporary quotes of the Rav. Volume 1 is his youth and what he saw in the background. Quoting him, don't want to say the greatness of the volumes, but what's important about those two volumes is that it's not Rakefet. The quotes are word by word from the Rav, and as you know, Rakefet did not try to pull them right or to pull them left. It is totally the Rav, as they say in modern Hebrew, netto. Totally the Rav, netto. It's his thinking. Right and left mixed together. Who the Rav was, with the contradictions and the dialectical tension, that was Rebbe, Baruch Hashem. And the Rav says, students come and ask me questions. I can't answer them. Each one has to make his own choices in life. You see, then these are not halakhic questions. So all I can do from a student is tell him, in my opinion, if you choose A, these are going to be the consequences. And if you choose B, these are the consequences. So I can understand you can go to a Rav who you feel has insight, has menuchat hanefesh, who can see a little deeper than the average individual. I can understand that. I went out on a limb yesterday. Didn't I tell you in 43 years we're going to reevaluate what I said at the start of this year yesterday? And I am positive I am right. All right, I'm positive. I'm a fool. Who can be positive? But I've lived life. I've seen life. I've lived thousands of years already. So I have a right to say 43 years Israel went this way. Now something is shifting. We've hit a certain oasis or acme of the summit of the mountain. It's a shift. All right. Not many people see that. People live day to day, rush around, but someone who learns Shas and Paiskim all the time, I can understand you want advice. But Ruach HaKodesh, as if it were, which borders, if only remotely, on the periphery of prophecy. Wow. And you know, hold on, Nechemya, and you know what's amazing? Remember, Agudat Yisrael was founded on the premise that there will never be a Jewish state before the advent of Messiah. Tell me, where are we sitting? Jerusalem. Who are we paying taxes to? The state of Israel. Jewish government. Jewish army. Jewish police force. Jewish fire station, Givat Mordechai. It may be the only fire station in the world that built a Beit Knesset, a separate Beit Knesset in the fire station, right down the block from here. It was written up by Mishpacha. I gave a copy of it to my grandson, who was a volunteer fireman in high school. That was his chesed, and he brought it in, and you go, can't believe the commander of the fire station. The officers, they were like, couldn't believe it, that it's written up in English and it's all over the world with pictures. Okay? This is Rabbi Weinberger. Yes, Nechemya.
Is there a substantive difference between saying that the Das Torah is the bordering and the periphery of a prophecy, and then on the other hand, a certain brand of a religious Zionist might say that the state of Israel is the first flowering of a redemption. And by the way, in this week's Katan in there, Shutim, which the rabbi answers in like...
I'm aware of that. I'm very familiar with it. My grandchildren made me a fan of Olam
Katan. So the person asked, was Rav Cook, did he have a prophecy? So Rav Avner answered, no, he had Ruach HaKodesh.
Okay, so I will answer you very simply that Rakefet has more than once criticized the Chardali world for emulating some of the worst aspects of the Haredi world, quote, end quote. And I'm a Talmud of the Rav, and even though I would love to believe that this is Reshit Smichat Gulatenu, we have to be humble and say, we hope it is. Miracles have happened here. We hope it is. Okay? But I'm not going to come out and say Rav Cook had unbelievable insight. The man was light years ahead of his generation. There's no one in the Torah world today, including Agudat Yisrael, who doesn't live like Rav Cook. Look at the outreach. Look at our Sameach. Look at the respect. Look at Chabad. Look what goes on with bringing people in. Look at the respect for the Chiloniyim when they're Makarev them. Who would ever dream that in Atlanta, Georgia, the biggest Orthodox shul has a parking lot that's open on Shabbos with the Haskama of the Gedolei Rosh Yeshiva of Nei Yisrael? You understand what I'm saying? And they are, so you know what I'm talking about. And they told me that so many Jews who drove to shul on Shabbos, we never said a word to them. Today, own homes, walking distance of the synagogue. They invented the term a Shabbos home. Whoever? Baruch Hashem. Believe me, I was offended by it. But who am I to come to Atlanta, a guest, and open up my mouth? I kept it quiet. So I agree with you to a certain degree. But it doesn't matter. In the greater religious Zionist world, we all, no one had a Mashiach going to be here tomorrow. Who can say things like that? We hope so. Yeah.
So then can someone say that a Das Torah, that we hope it's on the periphery of prophecy and it's going towards
that? No, I don't want to say that at all. Chas v'chalila. But I do want to say that I believe that part of the Chadali world emulates the worst in the Haredi world. Their zuzul for general studies, for university, for it's beyond words. This is what Torah is about. We retreat from the world. We're frightened of the world. We can't build a space. La Briyut, La Kavod, La Tiferet. We have a real problem there. And I personally, separate seating at weddings, to me it's offensive. I'm not a Gera Chassid. I want to sit with my wife. I'm no different than the Baron Soloveitchik. You can check it out with Rabbi Jane Marcus. There was a wedding. Rabbi's son-in-law was Rabbi Fall Marcus, Seichet Tzadik Levracha. God takes the best. He died young. Toronto. There was a wedding in the family, so Jay, Rafi Marcus's older brother, asked Rabbi, Rebbe, we have this wedding. I don't know what wedding was in the family, but we have some chassidim coming. We're making a separate seating little area with a mechitza for them, and the rest of the people are sitting families. So Rabbi says, well, what's the question? I love my wife. I want to sit next to my wife. I'm no different than Rabbi. I don't know. To me, it's a pasuk in Chumash al Ken Yazov at the Vivinova, Davak Bishtova Hayul Basarechat. I have no better friend than my wife. I don't want to go to a wedding and sit with a bunch of geezers and talk Lashon Hara for an hour and a half. I want to sit with my wife. It's bad enough I'm busy. I don't have time to honor her properly. At least if I'm going out, let me sit with her. I saw Gedolei Yisrael. Every good convention, we have pictures. Today, and if you tell me it's Flumkite, wonderful. Statistically, I spoke about statistics an hour ago. Statistically, we have more sexual crimes today than we ever dreamt we would have a Torah world. God have mercy. They just arrested a principal of a seminary, a Beis Yaakov seminary. Can't even mouth what the man is accused of. And women have stepped forth. I know people who got away with, I know someone, a YU graduate, he's only in jail, I think it's 7 years. They wanted to land him 15 years. There's a mismach of Yeshiva University. Posed as, I can't even mouth the words, what's the difference? But they were Charediyot, they didn't want to testify in court, it'll hurt the children, Shaduchim, etc. So they made a plea bargain with him. He got 7 years instead of 15. I don't want to tell you what I would have done had I been the judge, because I'm a real conservative with a small C, and I have little ability to tolerate sexual crimes. God have mercy on us. Rabbanim, Torah. It's across the board. And we're living in a world. You know my story, how I came home from the Kotel all upset that the Friday that this story with Michala broke, what is it, 2 years ago now, because I know the players. The woman who blew the whistle happened to be my student. And my grandson says to me, Saba, what are you so upset? At least it was a man with a woman. I said, that makes me more upset because you're right. Look where we're at, that my grandson can say to me, at least it was a man with a woman. I said, you make me more upset now. You're right. I agree with you. Okay. Gentlemen, but that's the most extreme statement. Let me quote to you from a good publication in America, a beautiful publication, The Struggle and the Splendor. A pictorial overview of a good Israel of America, published in 1982. And here, they quote from the original conference in 1919, the solution of all problems facing the Jewish people should be in the spirit of Torah. And now they explain, traditional Jewish life was menaced by many movements, but the most dangerous was secular Zionism because it claimed to embody the historic traditions of the nation. Agudat Yisrael branded secular Zionism as a falsifier of the very ideal that claimed to represent. The key word that labeled the new nationalism as inimical to Torah Judaism was secular. To Theodor Herzl and his comrades and followers in the Zionist movement, the Jewish religion and Zionism were separate concepts. The preponderance of the Zionist movement envisioned a Jewish people and a Jewish land that was free of Torah. So you see what I'm quoting? Do you understand my theory? Secular Zionism was their biggest enemy. They had to smash it. They had to destroy it. They had to wipe it off the map. They had to say it was treif. And it's not enough just to say, hashkafa-wise, it's treif. Das Torah declares it treif. I just want to mention in parentheses, taking you back to my lectures many, many months ago. Now do you start to understand my theory? Remember what I said? Why did God bring the Zionist movement about through secular Zionists? Why was it Ratzon Hashem that Theodor Herzl should lead us home? Why was it Ratzon Hashem that Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook in his apartment in Geula had two pictures on the wall facing each other where you walked in? One was his father, Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook, and the other one was Binyamin Zev Herzl. Why? Why was that God's will? Remember my answer? Zionism saved the Jewish people from total assimilation. We have more than 2 million Jews Shomrei Shabbat Alat Mat HaKodesh today. My feeling is, statistically, within 10 years, they're going to be more than 3 million Shomrei Shabbat. If everything works out with Chok Tal, the army, Haredim, within 25 years, you're going to have more than 5 million Shomrei Shabbat. What's the percentage of assimilation? England, I just read in Bama Mishpacha this morning, on to 50% assimilation. United States, on to 70% plus. What keeps us Jewish? The State of Israel. It gave birth to the tremendous Balshova movement. It gave birth to tens and tens, if not hundreds, of yeshivot for boys, seminaries for girls, Chabad, Ar Sameach, the outreach, Eish HaTorah. You know what the greatness was of God's plan? By having Herzl bring it about, even secular Jews could join the club. Had it been Rabbanim, it would have been totally dismissed. Oh, once again the fanatics, once again the rabbis, once again those what they call the Mordeyar who fight the Enlightenment. Once again they came up with some crazy, stupid idea. But the Ribbono Shel Olam brought it back through Theodor Herzl. And the results are unbelievable. And you can take it with endless, endless stories that proved the point so beautifully. One time a kid comes to Panovich. His grandfather had been one of the biggest anti-religious leaders of the Zionist movement. His grandfather was so anti-religious that Rav Yehoshua Putna told me in 1947 they had a memorial meeting for the 6 million, or 1946, when they first learned about the 6 million and how bad the tragedy was. They had the meeting in where Satmar is now building a whole complex in Geula, where at that time there was a movie theater that had the biggest seating capacity in Jerusalem. And when Rav Herzog got up to make a kelmale, this individual walked out in protest. Many decades later, 1980s, they said to Rav Shach, "We have a new Talmud here. We'd like you to meet him." Introduced the Talmud to Rav Shach, and he hears the kid's name, and he says to him, "You're a grandson?" And he says, "Yes." And Rav Shach broke into tears. The same story is the mirror image. The head of the Histadrut, legendary figure, Yitzchak Ben Aharon. Ah, hatred for religion. Mapamnik, Mapainik, secular Zionist. His grandson, one of the top students of Rav Amital and Rav Aaron Lichtenstein in the Gush. Grandson refused to be interviewed. The newspapers jumped on it. What a story. 1990s. Refused to be interviewed. But private matter. They went to his grandfather, former head of the Histadrut by that time, man in his 90s, and he said, "Yes, I'm very upset. My grandson became religious, went back to those old-fashioned ideas." Unbelievable. Unbelievable how even in his 90s, the grandfather still was so distant. But thank God for the state of Israel that lo yudach mimenu nidach. It's not like the great diaspora where so many families are lost for eternity. And here, that grandson married endless children, Toru Gedula b'mokam echad. Anyway, this is one comment, one explanation, one quote. And then it goes on, the Council of Torah Sages. And it explains what is so important, what is so great about the Mo'etzet Gedolei HaTorah. The Jew cannot relegate the sages to the realm of formal religion, giving them the authority to decide only questions of dairy spoons falling into meat pots, esoteric questions of Talmudic logic, or matters of synagogue ritual. Israel is a nation founded on Torah. It must be guided in every aspect by Torah wisdom and Torah instinct. The secular, oriented, observant layman is no more qualified to decide matters of importance of Jewish life than is a patient to guide a surgeon's hand. Now, very interesting. What? Very problematic. Tell me, when you need surgery, do you go to a rabbi or do you go to a skilled medical doctor who's a surgeon? No, answer the question. Do you know how many people go to rabbis to ask advice about surgery? And what can a rabbi answer? What kind of analysis is this? Of course we love rabbis, need rabbis, worship rabbis, adore rabbis. I've gotten so much covered in my lifetime from my students, Baruch Hashem. But medicine, investments, Rebbe, what stock should I buy? Every great rabbi I know who got involved in stocks had to run away from America one step ahead of indictment. And I don't want to mention names. But if you know what I'm talking about, sign on the dotted line. Want to build a building? What material to use? What framework? Okay. I admit, Lubavitcher Hasidim don't have a problem. The legendary story with Gutnik when he comes to the Rebbe and he says, yes, Gutnik says to the Rebbe, "I'm tired of being a malamed. I'd like to make a living. I'd like to go into business. What should I do?" I'd like to explore. And the Rebbe tells them, look for diamonds and gold. And they chart. The Rebbe looks at a map and shows them where to look. Anyone here can correct me, but I believe he found the gold. He never found the diamonds. And he's still looking. Yes, Lugutnik? Still looking. I hope I have the story right. If I'm wrong, invert it. But I believe those are the facts. So even there, as much as we want to believe in the greatness of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, he was only 50% right. All right, that 50% was worth a few billion dollars. But nevertheless, what? You see what they're writing here. But this is Das Torah. To the vast army of our good adherents, Das Torah is the last word. Other movements might relegate their Torah authorities to the study hall and leave practical matters to its secular leaders. Absolutely. The greatest mistake of Agudat Yisrael is that anyone who goes into the Knesset automatically gets the name Rabbi. Chavrei Knesset? Politicians. Politician by definition. A deal maker. A compromiser. A realistic person. Chas v'chalila, Aaron Lakefet should be described in those terms. A Rav, a Talmud Chacham, a Rosh Yeshiva, a Magid Shir. You live in a world of Torah, timeless, honest. No compromises booked or tolerated. A politician? Lakefet being a politician? Be a tragedy for the Knesset and a tragedy for Lakefet. Rav Moshe Tzvi Neria, the 4 years he were in the Knesset, Rav Moshe Tzvi Neria always used to say, those 4 years were the worst years of my life. Quote, end quote. What are they talking about here? What are they talking? Mizrahi was so smart. Keep the rabbis out of politics. The Chavrei Knesset are not going to listen to them anyway. They wheel and deal and then compromise and double talk. God have mercy. Don't want to go any further. Stories of Chavrei Knesset, big rabbanim with big beards and big payers, the money that was robbed, that was winked at. I was once on an LL plane when one of the famous Agudat Yisrael leaders got onto that plane. You couldn't believe how that man was maledicted by the hundreds of people standing around. And many of them were religious. Don't want to spell it out. He's dead already. You can check it out. It's well known. Give you a hint. Carpets. Carpets. C-A-R-P-E-T-S. One little hint tells it all. What are they talking about here? But let me end off on showing you on a high note what Torah's up against. Now it describes the Mu'etzet Gedolei HaTorah, describes this concept, describes how it began. It's a self-perpetuating body, which is an important concept. I understand it. Balabatim have nothing to deal with who will be elected. You can't play one Rebbe against the other, one Rosh Yeshiva against the other, one Chassidic Rebbe against the other. It's by acclamation who the Gedolei Yisrael are. We all know the Chafetz Chaim, the Chaim Isaac Grishensky, the Geber Rebbe, the German rabbis, and then they select their successors. And then it goes on, page 23 and 25, it tells us that even in America, the last bastion of Torah to be created in the world, an American Mu'etzet Gedolei HaTorah was created in 1948. Headed by Rav Reuven Grzovsky, who was succeeded by Rav Aaron Cutler. The current chairman is the Venerable Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. Nechemya, do you believe what I just read to you? Do you understand the falseness, the falschkeit, the publication in the name of the good of Yisrael, absolute lies? When was the first Mu'etzet Gedolei HaTorah created in the United States? 1941. Hey, wait a minute. Moetzet Gedolei Torah was created in 1941. An absolute fact. Open up the Silver Era. You don't believe the Silver Era? The author's not honest? Check his footnotes. Check the sources. Go to our Pardes. Go into our Kefetz time machine and go back. I'll take you to the convention. Hey, Nehemiah. Why are they lying here? Why do they have to mention 1948? What's going on here? Anyone can tell me? Ah, my dear students, I wish it weren't so. I wish these weren't the facts. Of course the Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah was organized in 1941. Of course it started functioning. But Agudat Yisrael has one problem. If they tell the truth, they are in a quagmire. Can anyone tell me who was one of the most prominent members of the first Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah organized in 1941 in the United States of America? Moriu Rebbe, Rebbe Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. Oh boy, David Berger, with that illustrious name. Did I get a Shaila Friday because of that name, David Berger? But nevertheless, we are with you, all David Bergers, but a little bit sideways. Gentlemen, Agudat Yisrael, imagine having to explain Das Torah, Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah, and one of the biggest names, if not the biggest name in post-World War II Torah history, was a member of the first Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah. What happened? Que pasa? He left. He's gone. 1946, honorary president, Mizrahi, or not that year, very shortly thereafter. They have to explain. Wow. What a question. Oh, they have no explanation. Falsify history. 1948, after World War II, when all the refugees were settled and they started to function again. So of course, the Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah was recharged, rejuvenated. And of course, then it was the Rabbi Gazovsky, the son of Rabbi Arkhbel Leibovich, the childhood chava of Rabbi Aaron Cutler, the man who saved Rabbi Aaron Cutler for the Litvische Torah Welt. Of course, very easy, very simple. Recreate history, tell a lie, perfectly forbidden. Aye, it says, Midavar Sheker Tirchak. All right, we left that out of the Torah. Lechecha Meyatzecha, we leave out of the Torah. Very convenient to act on that level. It is Falschkeit, falseness, deceit, and all that goes with it, and all the implications of an education of that nature. Anyway, gentlemen, I'm only beginning. I'm nowhere near Yitzchak. We're just beginning. We're just beginning. You cannot believe the material I have next week to get into Shir. It's $99 million. We're not satisfied with thousands anymore. Next week, 99 mil on the IOU list. Gentlemen, will it be worth it? You'll tell me after this year next week. Okay. Oh boy, is next week something. But the beginning, we're just beginning. Nehemiah, you're absolutely right. I am a religious Zionist Jew. But I don't have to have an inferiority complex. I can handle my learning with anyone, my Yirat Shemayim, Baruch Hashem, my family, my students. And I live a certain way. I'm not second best. You have a viewpoint? Absolutely. Do I respect your viewpoint? 1,000%, except when it's false. When you tell a lie, I get very upset. Intellectual honesty is extremely important to a humble student of Rav Soloveitchik. I hear the Rav, I'm listening to a tape, obviously, 1968. He's eulogizing his wife, and the word that he uses more than once is her intellectual honesty. Okay, so to reiterate, what do we do today? We dealt with Das Torah, the reaction around the world, and I can understand why all of us have that viewpoint and we stand together, and I'd like to think we build the mound to stand on, not push another Jew into a dish. Of course, we need lay people, we need advice. Mr. Gruss is a great example. I refer you to the Rav, the world of Rabbi Joseph P. Soloveitchik, and the Rav's unbelievable. People said to me after I published it that they don't know any other place in rabbinic literature where a Gadol Shebe Gadolim should give a talk on who is a Balabas. And he spoke about Yosef HaTzadik, obviously Joe Gruss, Yosef HaTzadik, and the difference between Yosef HaTzadik and Yosef Soloveitchik. I mean, unbelievable talk. The example from Rabbi Shach with Panim O Panim, you can't appreciate it, but boy, can I appreciate it. As someone who read every issue of Panim O Panim, what was the first name of Panim O Panim? Do you know when it first came out? Ayin Ba'ayin. And then they changed it to Panim El Panim because, not in Hebrew, Ayin Ba'ayin sounds like Ayin Tachet Ayin. And in modern Hebrew, Panim El Panim, Kamayim HaPanim, it's a pasuk in Mishle, it sounds a lot better. It's a lot more attractive. And I remember Rav Shach, I thought it was cute, but a lot of people got very upset. Now, where we find Das Torah, I quote it to the one place in Shas, and obviously everyone will agree that that's not a source for the modern concept of Das Torah. And then I showed you Rabbi Weinberger, and finally I quoted to you from a good publication, The Struggle and the Splendor. Very, very fascinating, but at the end, what they have to say about the Moetzei Gedolei HaTorah, this is impossible to accept, impossible to condone. It is mamish, an outright lie and deceit. And you might say, maybe it's a typo, maybe it should have been 1941, but I thought of that. It can't be a typo, because it gives the names of those who took over in 48. Rav Reuven Grzebski was not, I don't even know if he was in America yet when the first Moetzet was formed, but it could be he was in America, but he was a low-key player. But by 1948, the Rosh Yeshiva Beit Medrash Elyon becomes the head of the Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah, so that proves to me that 48 is not a mistake. That's what was in the original text. Now, just give me 1 second. I just... Chabad is unbelievable what they can come up with. Here is a picture of a little kid staring at the Rebbe as the Rebbe is giving him a dollar or a candy. Which is it? Wouldn't you have rather wanted a candy at that age? And that little kid is sitting in this room. I want this in color. This picture I want to preserve. I have to... This is just unbelievable. Now, here's another picture where Rav Shlomo Gorin, this picture has to be from 1957-58, the Rebbe's beard is still basically black, and there's Rav Shlomo Gorin in army uniform, army regalia, in the United States of America, sitting with the Rebbe in 770. And I can tell you, when he came to the yeshiva to give a shiur in the Rav's class, and the Rav yet knew him from Chevron when the Rav was here in 35, Rav Shlomo Gorenchik, and he walked in army uniform, a general in the Israeli Defense Forces. What it did to us as young kids in the yeshiva. And then when he gave the shiur, took off his army hat, yeah, the hat he's wearing here, with the brim, the dress hat, and he held the Rambam open with the dress hat. Halavai, we would have taken a picture of the Rambam held open by the dress hat with a brim of a general of the IDF. Ashrei Ayin Ra'at Hazot. And anachnu tzrichim leodot la kadosh baruch hu Shechiyanu v'kimanu v'higiyanu lazman hazeh. Thank you very, very much. Next Sunday is on the house, but Monday course. Till we meet again in health and happiness. Das v'danya. If anyone wants these pictures, you can have them. On condition that the little son gives me a colored picture.